The way that case law stands right now, as of today, the 14th, El Paso, and Texarkana Courts of Appeals have adopted the position. The Texarkana position is actually an old one. It's from 2001. But I thought it would be restricted to that until the 14th adopted this position in 2017. Fort Worth, San Antonio, and Corpus Christi Courts of Appeals have rejected it. A very thoughtful federal district court opinion by Judge Rodriguez, formerly of the Supreme Court of Texas, also rejected it. Unpublished opinions from various courts go both ways, and the issue is live in many courts now, and I hear about it from time to time. Sometimes my own students are involved in litigating the issue. As I said, this position is introduced and justified as an interpretation or a construction of the veil-piercing statute. Most of you are familiar with the original problem that the veil-piercing statute was meant to address. There was too much uncertainty, the bar felt, in veil-piercing law because of Castleberry versus Branscombe in 1986. Now, if you're familiar with veil-piercing law from other jurisdictions, the language that we're going to look at here won't look very broad. It won't look very uncertain. It'll look a lot like language from other jurisdictions. And I have to say, when I first heard about the Castleberry problem coming into the jurisdiction from elsewhere, I thought, well, that language is not much of a problem. But I knew from my own practice that Texas case law's standards for veil piercing were pretty loose. In fact, I remember being surprised looking up cases back in the early 90s when I read cases from Texas and saw just on what loose grounds they would allow veil piercing. I thought, wow, this is a boon to plaintiffs. So I can understand the reason for the statute just from the case law itself, not necessarily from Castleberry. But here's what the Castleberry court said, and this language is important because it becomes part of our understanding of the statute. The court says, we disregard the corporate fiction when the corporate form has been used as part of a basically unfair device to achieve an inequitable result. That's the general test. And then the court explained when that would happen with a list of six things, and only four of them are relevant for our purposes. But the court said, well, this happens, this basically unfair device to achieve an inequitable result happens when the corporation is used as a means of perpetrating fraud. And that's what Castleberry said, but other cases, and Castleberry itself also said, sham to perpetrate a fraud was the standard, which I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean in its original format, but that was historically the standard given in Texas jurisprudence. It's an unclear standard. It could be actual fraud or constructive fraud, and there were some constructive fraud cases before Castleberry, and the issue was ripe for decision in Castleberry itself. Is actual fraud required, or will constructive fraud also work? The court also listed another basis of veil piercing when the corporation was organized and operated as a mere tool or business conduit of another corporation. This is called alter ego. When it's resorted to as a means of evading an existing legal obligation, this sounds a lot like fraudulent transfer, and many veil piercing cases do read like fraudulent transfer cases. And then number six, relied upon to justify a wrong, which brings about an inequitable result. And of course, that's about as broad as you could make it. So this is the language from Castleberry that the statute was meant to fix. Castleberry itself, the decision held that constructive fraud alone was sufficient to pierce the corporate veil. But if your standard is basically unfair advice, a device to achieve an inequitable result, then constructive fraud is a justifiable specification of that more general standard. But look at the language from Castleberry here. This becomes part of our reading of the statute later. Castleberry said, alter ego is only one of the bases for disregarding the corporate fiction. Remember that word, bases? The court said the basis, remember that word, basis, used here to disregard the corporate fiction, a sham to perpetrate a fraud, is separate from alter ego. So we have two different bases, alter ego as a basis and sham to perpetrate a fraud as a basis. Then the court said, it is sometimes confused with intentional fraud. However, neither A, fraud, nor B, an intent to defraud need be shown as a prerequisite to disregarding the corporate entity. It is sufficient if recognizing the separate corporate existence would bring about an inequitable result. Constructive fraud is going to be enough after Castleberry, but in the course of its opinion, the court distinguished constructive from actual fraud with this language at the bottom. Actual fraud usually involves dishonesty of purpose or intent to deceive. But again, these are different bases of veil piercing. And that's not a complete description of the basis of veil piercing. You also have to have domination or control, or as the court said, the corporate form has been used as part of a basically unfair device. Typically, that required a showing of domination or control by some person in control of the corporate machinery. And then some inequitable result, which would include sham to perpetrate a fraud, which under Castleberry was both actual fraud and constructive fraud. Okay, so that's what the court said. And then here is the statute today. Now, you'll recognize language from Castleberry in the statute. We're going to walk through this language slowly because I'll call your attention back to it as I go through the presentation. I don't have all of the language here. You're welcome to pull the statute out. I've only included the language that is relevant to the 14th Court of Appeals construction of the statute.